Our government.
Iran.
Your government.
Proliferation.
Public option.
A serious insurgency.
We do have a plan. We're working on it.
Just to give you a sense of perspective.
It's Monday. Good morning. That means it's time to check out what's going on in the agenda this week. Joining us today is Marcus Mabry. He's the international business editor for our partner, the New York Times. And from Bush House in London, Jonathan Marcus, diplomatic correspondent for the BBC World Service. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start off in Iran. What we've learned from the International Atomic Energy Agency is that Iran is capable of making a nuclear bomb, but the agency is not saying whether or not they're building a nuclear weapon, and Mohammad El-Baradei says they are not.
The agency has no concrete proof that there is an ongoing weapon program in Iran.
Mohammad El-Baradei, the head of the IAEA. So, Jonathan, he says there's no concrete proof. What does that mean?
Well, it's an interesting assessment because there's been a lot of discussion in recent weeks and days about information that the International Atomic Energy Agency has. There have been leaks of various memos from the agency which suggest that Iran has made quite considerable progress designing warheads and things like that. Now, of course, the American administration said that it believes that Iran's work was halted in this area back in 2003, but there are a number of European governments who are rather sceptical of that, think that work might have continued. So at the moment, it's very uncertain as to exactly where Iran's capabilities stand.
So National Security Advisor General James Jones was on Face the Nation yesterday, and he had this to say about the inspections of the plant.
We now have an Iran that is willing to come to the table. We have two more meetings scheduled, one in which they will announce they will allow the inspectors to visit the Qom site, which has been just recently announced, and the other one to discuss methodology by which we can ship their low-enriched uranium out of the country.
So, Marcus, a little bit of a hopeful tone there that Iran is willing to let the inspectors come in as they're going to. Is that a good sign that Iran is coming to the table and allowing inspectors in so quickly?
Well, it's certainly a positive sign. The question is going to be, and we'll see how this week plays out, will these positive moves by Iran actually lead to a kind of dissolution once more of the American-led coalition that's looking to counter Iran? You know, the administration really felt that they had made great progress when the Americans, the Brits, and the French all came out together just a few weeks ago and said, you know, we have new resolve. We're going to draw a line in the sand. Iran will not cross this line. They will not be allowed to have nuclear capabilities. But with Iran coming out and saying suddenly, oh, well, we'll let inspectors in. Oh, we'll ship our used nuclear fuel to Russia. There's a question of whether or not this Western alliance can actually maintain itself or if it'll go back to what it was before the revelation of Iran's second nuclear enrichment site, which is basically a coalition that could not accomplish a whole lot and could not really bring tough sanctions against Iran. So Iran could end up benefiting, actually, from these kind of tactical moves.
Okay, so let's move to Afghanistan real quickly. You probably may have heard the conversation we had earlier and General McChrystal talking last week about 8 years and the situation there is not better than it is. And Marcus, how does the Obama administration then come to the American people and say, we need to spend millions, possibly billions more in Afghanistan after 8 years and no progress?
So that's exactly the challenge the administration faces. On the one hand, it cannot deny that the public support for this war is evaporating. 8 years, Americans are tired. We're an impatient nation, generally speaking. We've been there longer than we were in Iraq,
of course. 8 years, impatient? I don't know.
But at the same time, though, yeah. You're talking about an incredibly difficult country that has seen other great empires, from the Soviets to the British, crumble in its face of the resistance in Afghanistan. The problem here is, as the president said, if the goal is going to be to keep another terrorist attack from originating out of that country, to keep the Taliban from reinstituting themselves, Al-Qaeda from reimplanting themselves in that country, that's a huge, tall order. 8 years actually is not a long time to be doing it, especially as one of your earlier guests said. We actually haven't been trying to build up the Afghan forces for most of that time. So the problem is going to be, how the administration, do you acknowledge the public evaporation of support and at the same time say to the American people, we are making enough progress that we should stay, and possibly even if we decide to, after our strategic review, increase our troop numbers. That's a really, really hard balance to strike.
Okay, so Jonathan, we have news that the Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao is going to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-il. He went there over the weekend. Do we have any idea what the two of them were talking about?
Well, there are various trade agreements and other things, which is what you'd kind of expect. But I think essentially what the world is looking for out of this visit, it's the highest ranking Chinese trip to North Korea for many, many years now. And they're really looking to see what encouragement, I hesitate to use the word pressure, but what encouragement the Chinese can give to the North Koreans to return to talks with the key regional players, and obviously with the United States. The North Koreans want to have bilateral talks with the Americans. The Americans have pretty well accepted that you can have those sorts of talks within the framework of broader talks that would involve other countries like Japan and South Korea and so on. And the Americans are a little bit in a bind here. They want to move forward with North Korea. They want to explore what options there may be, but they're very conscious of the fact that they have to bring countries like Japan and South Korea along too. And in many ways, Japan and South Korea might be rather more sceptical about what can be achieved from these talks than at the moment the Obama administration seems to be.
Is China interested in helping to North Korea to come back to the table to talk about its nuclear program?
I think ideally the Chinese would like the North Koreans back at the table. There's no doubt about that. The problem for China is it's a perennial one. I mean, the Chinese don't want a massive nuclear crisis so close to home. Equally, they don't want the sort of pressure on North Korea that might lead the whole country to collapse and waves, a huge tide of refugees might flood across China's frontier. So the crucial thing, I think, is trying to get the message through to the Chinese that it's only through this concerted effort to bring pressure to bear on Pyongyang that any progress can be made. I think the Chinese get that message now. The question, of course, is how much pressure, how much influence they can really bring to bear on this rather extraordinary reclusive North Korean leadership.
Okay, Jonathan Marcus is the diplomatic correspondent for our partner, the BBC, and Marcus Mabry, international business editor for our partner, the New York Times.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.